For South Carolina Public Radio, I'm Bradley Fuller. Concert venues may be built for the enjoyment of music, but could they also function as spaces of political engagement? Jonathan Neufeld, a violist, music critic, and philosophy professor at the College of Charleston, thinks so. Jonathan's interests include exploring the link between public performances and the political public sphere, and he has a book under contract with Oxford University Press entitled Music and Public: How Performance Shapes Democracy. I had the chance to speak with Jonathan about the ideas behind this book project and his interdisciplinary interests. Here's a few highlights of our conversation. Jonathan, thanks so much for being here today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Bradley.
You have a book in the works called Music in Public: How Performance Shapes Democracy, or How Performances Shape Democracy. Mm-hmm. Don't musicians who are performing have enough on their minds already without having to worry about shaping democracy?
Yeah, they do, but they do it whether or not they're thinking about it often. So that's handy. They do it in their programming in a way. They do it just in performing for audiences and exposing audiences to the music that they choose. So the audiences are already active, already doing something in just coming to listen to the concert in a way. So whether or not you're paying attention to specifically democratic participation, you're already participating in it. Sort of like you and me right now. Like, I'm not thinking about participating in the public sphere, but here I am on the radio participating in the public sphere. So whether or not I'm thinking about that as the content of what I'm doing, it's what I'm doing. So similarly with musicians, I think.
So if there's a musician on the stage that is pursuing a career in music to get away from that political realm, or There's someone in the audience who just wants to relax from hearing all the news on TV and all the things that are going on in Washington, are they ever able to fully escape that, or are they still somehow participating in the public sphere and democracy and even political action?
Yeah, so the latter. So I think they're participating in all of this stuff, which is heartening in a way, right? Because it's we don't have, so to participate in politics or to be a democratic citizen, it's much, much more than arguing about the content of any particular political issue. And so I don't have to get into a fight with somebody, right? I can go and participate in a shared culture together. So it's an interesting place where we can sort of overcome a lot of political differences and be together as Americans, which to me is a political democratic act, right? So being together within our disagreements, participating in a common culture is something that we do that's political without our being in an argument with one another. So it's an acting citizenship in a way.
So thinking about a specific performance, how might someone portray, say, a more democratic approach to their music versus one that might be more authoritarian or aristocratic, perhaps?
Yeah, and there are lots of different ways of doing this. So I think this is a kind of irritating answer, actually, but it depends on the context that you're in, right? So there are a number of ways of programming, I think, that sort of reach out to your audience in interesting ways. So we were talking a second ago about a piece by Gabriela Alina Frank, contemporary American composer, who will go someplace and be in residence, for example, in Indianapolis, I want to say, where she composed a symphony after hanging out with a Hispanic community for a few months and making music with them and making music around with the symphony and with a variety of people in the community. And when the piece was premiered, a wide variety of people who don't normally come to the symphony came to the symphony. People who normally come to the symphony came to the symphony to hear this new piece. And so while they're at the symphony, of course, they're there for the music itself. But it's the music itself in this incredibly rich local context, and the music itself also spoke to that in interesting ways. So, but even if it hadn't sort of directly drawn on, for example, Peruvian music, so she's a Peruvian American composer, if it hadn't done that, it still would have been this interestingly democratic act in its act of composition, in its performance, and its dissemination afterward. So that's an example of a recent work that I think is sort of democratic to its core in interesting ways.
So could it be that two performances which sound exactly alike on a CD, say, are
essentially different artistic offerings based on all these extra musical circumstances.
Yeah, it seems to me that it could be. So I'll give a concrete example again. So Daniel Barenboim in, I want to say 2001, might have been 2000, performed as an encore the prelude to Tristan and Isolde at the Israel Festival. And there's a taboo against, he calls it a taboo, kind of ban against performing Wagner live in big public places, has been since 1938 and the November program in 38. And Barenboim decided that, like, it's time to perform Wagner in public. Zubin Mehta had tried it in the 80s, and it didn't go well. And he was stopped in his second performance by someone climbing on stage and touching his arm. So you can imagine, so this was preceded by a big discussion. One of the Berlin orchestras, I can't remember which one, was performing behind him. But he had a discussion first, you know, a bunch of the audience left, sort of slammed the door and yelled a bunch of things. And after about a half an hour's worth of discussion, they performed Tristan. And so imagine now that listening to the performance, like, we'll phase out the boos, so we'll put it on CD so we don't hear the background. So that performance, if it sounded exactly the same in Berlin, would have been, in my view, would have been a different performance, right? All of those contextual factors make it a different act, a different performance than a sonically identical one in Berlin or Chicago.
Do you have the sense that an opera house or orchestra, any type of performing body, is being negligent if they are always aiming to please, never to ruffle any feathers, you know, always to avoid those boos, or is that just economic sense?
Yeah, that's a really hard question. So the modernist in me and the philosophical writer in me who likes to challenge what people think and say slightly crazy things and then justify it often will want musicians to do the same thing. But of course, I don't depend for my living on the largesse of strangers who come and buy tickets, first of all, but really who give donations to the orchestra. So yeah, I think it's good economic sense in a way to not ruffle too many feathers sometimes, or I can see why one would think that's the case. But lots of orchestras actually do interesting and innovative programming and play new music. For example, the Nashville Symphony has done a good job of playing contemporary American voices, contemporary American composers. And it was more, at least if I'm remembering this correctly, a little bit more of a conservative performance venue and a conservative, relatively conservative musically orchestra before. And they've branched out in programming more and more in the last 15 years. And they've done really well. It's partly because people come to expect it, partly because it's American voices, and so it's a shtick, and it's kind of cool, and you listen in an interesting way. Again, you're sort of embodying this American democratic populace when you go there, and this is a way of doing it. So I think there are lots of ways that might on the face of it seem to be feather-ruffling choices that you might make in contemporary programming or playing interesting, weird juxtapositions of pieces or even playing things in interesting new ways that if given the right kind of prep and if your audience is sort of open to new things and you open them to new things by doing new things, then I think it's, yeah, ruffling feathers is a good thing and isn't actually, at the end of the day, ruffling feathers. It's just showing somebody something new. But it's hard not to, if you're having money issues, money problems, and you can play all of these war horses incredibly well, and you know everybody loves these pieces, then of course you have an all Beethoven day, and or you have a Viennese classics day, and you do Mozart, Haydn, and Beethoven, right?
And Strauss.
And so much Strauss. So, which is great. But yeah.
So there's a way to be tactful about it.
There is. Yeah, there is. And a lot of this has to do with the presence of, so critics, I'm going to plug critics for a second, not only because I am one, but critics can do a decent job of mentioning programming, mentioning the interest of programming, and if people actually read them. And there's a substantial enough talk about the pieces beforehand and the performances after in a way that says, oh, isn't it interesting that we heard this piece and the way that it echoed the Haydn that came first, right? I can see why to make programming seem thoughtful, and because it is thoughtful, and to remind people of the sort of work that goes together in presenting this show to them. When there's something that's wonky and sticks out and ruffles feathers, it's like, well, look, there's a reason that we did this. It's not just because it's new. It's because it's new and good in interesting ways. And here, listen to how it echoes these other things that you're actually familiar with. So that sort of context providing is a valuable thing that can be done by the program, can be done by the conductor, can be done by critics. And we're, since we're going to the same sources, say newspapers, less and less, it's harder to sort of provide that context. And so something new is just sort of a weird thing that suddenly assaults your ears when you arrive at the concert hall. So yeah, there are ways of providing this context that are interesting and good and can be more participatory, make the audience feel more included in the choices that the orchestra makes, it seems to me.
To wrap up with one question that I guess would satisfy my need for a simple step to follow in the listicle generation, what's one thing I could do to be more civically engaged as a concert goer?
More civically engaged. So I think there are two different kinds of answer to that question. So one, what can you do within the musical public sphere to be more of a participant in that? Because I think this is different from the broader public sphere. And this is just to pay close attention when you go to a concert. Listen carefully. Pay attention to things that you might not pay attention to otherwise, like the programming. Why did they program this way? Think about the kind of work that goes into the production as you're listening to it, and listen to the dynamic interplay of the musicians themselves on stage. And just watch how the people work together and work with the audience. And I mean, this is just the short answer to that is listen well, right, when you go to a concert. But there's all of this participatory, dynamic, emotional, tense, intellectually interesting engagement with amongst the musicians that sort of spills over to the audience and in a way makes sort of demands on the audience, but demands on participation and enjoyment from the audience. So to think about you actually playing a role in that engagement instead of just sitting back, okay, now I have to be quiet, now I'm in the dark, and so I'm going to let this passively wash over me. This, I take it, is not your role. Your role is to be an active listener and to pay attention to the actions that are going on stage. So that within the musical public, that. And the second, and this I think bleeds out into the general public sphere, talk to your friends about your experience that you had. Talk to the people who you went with. Ask them what they thought about the piece. Ask them if they liked something or didn't like something. And it's almost always, I do this all the time in my classes, and the initial response is almost always, oh, I thought it was nice. Oh, that was good. It's like, well, what did you think was good? Could anything have been better? And then you're a little bit shy about saying anything about that. I'm like, no, really. And if then, and this is now the philosopher a little bit coming out, but I think this is also the small d Democrat coming out in me, someone who's interested in democracy. Like when you have those little moments of disagreement, critical disagreement, oh, I really liked how the first violin, the concertmaster, was leading a little bit just before her solo and was not quite perfectly together, but pulled the orchestra forward into the solo, for example. This is a detailed bit of listening, but where you might actually like this bit of leadership, and your friend is like, oh no, it just sounded like she was rushing. I hated that. It's like she was trying to get to her solo, so what was she doing, right? And talking about different things that happened. A friend of mine I went to a concert with a couple of years ago really liked it was a Bizet piece, I want to say, and I just couldn't stand it. I really, really didn't like it. So the horns and the brass were so deafeningly loud that it was impressive on the one hand. Like, wow, you guys are really loud. On the other hand, it's like there's a difference between filling the space and being loud. Right? And I disagreed with everybody around me about that. We had a really nice conversation about the difference between fullness of sound and loudness. They all think I'm wrong, and I still think I'm right. But and again, this is sort of the heart of democracy in a way, but the stakes are much lower because it's about whether we like the thing that we just heard. So it's going and talking to your friends about something like music and what you liked about it is a sort of practice ground for debating more serious things, a respectful way of debating more serious things. On the other hand, it's also, it cuts close to home, because when you really like a piece of music and someone makes that face of, ugh, why would you like that? Like, it hurts quickly, and it's weird, and it makes you think hard about your own preferences. So there's something more personal about these confrontations that also I think is pretty good practice for politics, which are less personal in a way, but not at the end of the day, right? So,
yeah, and I think to engage with an audience, either in a debate or in a performance, is in one sense to lay oneself up for scrutiny and contradiction.
Yep. And think how brave performers are to go up and perform, to lay themselves out in front of all of these people, some of whom are talkative jerks like me, and and who will write about them later on. I try to be nice, but it's an incredibly brave act that they do. But then to lay yourself out in public is a brave act. To say what you think, and then to be prepared to say why you think what you think, is brave. And when musicians sort of bind together the justification for what they're doing right into what they're doing, right? If you can't hear why it's worthwhile for me to do this, then you really need to say something in detail, Mr. Critic, right, about why it is I ought not to have done what I just did. Musicians sort of pile the justification into the performance itself, so their hearts are really on their sleeves. And politics in that sense is a little bit easier in a way, because you can make a mistake, and just like this interview, right? We can sort of edit out, or I can go back and say, oh, I didn't really mean what I said. But there's no room for that for the solo violist playing Hindemith's Schwanendreher in front of 700 people, or however many people would show up to such a concert. So you perform, and that's what the piece is going to be tonight. So there's a kind of authority and a kind of risk in performance that is invigorating and exciting. So,
Jonathan, thanks so much for your time today and for braving the studio for the dialogue.
Great. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it, Bradley.
Highlights of a conversation I had with Jonathan Neufeld of the College of Charleston. Jonathan's research interests include political philosophy and the philosophy of music. For South Carolina Public Radio, I'm Bradley Fuller.